It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you are listening to MPBN Radio. Ahead on Maine Things Considered this evening, Maine has scored poorly in government transparency. We'll look at one legislator's efforts to improve the situation. And Governor Paula Page and Canadian authorities talk energy in Boston. We'll have those stories ahead. First, though, this news. A Republican has won the recount of a contested Maine House of Representatives seat. The House District 19 recount took place today. Democrat Jean Noon of Sanford asked for the recount after she appeared to lose the race to Republican Matthew A. Harrington by 14 votes. The Maine Secretary of State's office says Harrington actually won by 13 votes. Noon is the widow of Representative William Noon, who died in July. House District 19 covers part of Sanford. The term will run for 1 year. A spokeswoman for the Secretary of State's office also says there were complaints at one polling place that some voters received the wrong ballot. A University of Maine professor missing for more than 24 hours, overdue from a hunting trip, has been found alive in the woods around Alton in Penobscot County. Robert Vadas was located after a canine unit found his hat this afternoon. A subsequent grid search led to Vadas, who was suffering from cold and could not get up but was alive. Lieutenant Dan Scott of the Maine Warden Service says it's the best possible outcome.
Our warm, sunny conditions today helped out as well, made searching good from both the air and the ground, and we were able to locate him, and everybody's heading home safe tonight.
The 79-year-old Vadas was taken to a local hospital for treatment. And the University of Maine at Augusta has been designated one of the top military-friendly schools in the country by three publications. Spokeswoman Rachel Paling says that attracting military students has been an aim since the college opened in 1965.
Our very first year, we put a sign out, welcome veterans, and that was for Vietnam-era veterans to enroll, and we've continued that tradition to this day. We've always supported military students, and we hope to continue to do so.
UMA earned high rankings in GI Jobs magazine, the Military Times, and the Military Advanced Education and Transition Guide to Colleges and Universities. Factors include support services for veterans, flexibility, financial aid, graduation rates for vets, and more. Among other programs, Paling says UMA offers veterans a peer mentoring program and special veterans lounges, as well as having veterans on staff. In weather tonight, showers turning to flurries in the north and west with some accumulation over the mountains. Otherwise, cloudiness with a few showers inland and down east. Low temperatures tonight in the mid-30s to low 40s north to south. First today, a state senator from Cape Neddick is hoping her initiative aimed at improving government transparency will be revived next week. Democrat Don Hill will have to convince at least one Republican leader to support her efforts to enhance the flow of information between state agencies and the legislature. The Legislative Council rejected Hill's bill last month along party lines, but the sponsor says there are new developments that warrant a second look. A.J. Higgins has details.
The panel split 5-5 along party lines on Hill's bill, but Hill says recent events underscore the need for more transparency.
Now I am having the opportunity to really talk to the Republican side and say, listen, here's what this bill's all about. Here are situations that I'm trying to avoid in the future.
Hill says her bill request would create additional accountability within the executive branch by requiring all state agencies to file an annual report with the Legislative Committee of Jurisdiction. The report would outline any possible federal grant opportunities. She points to examples this year in which the LePage administration unilaterally decided not to apply for funds that help homeowners detect the presence of arsenic in their wells or for conservation funds available under the Federal Forest Legacy Program. And she says it's also troubling that lawmakers on the Appropriations Committee learned about funding problems in a program that helps the blind and visually impaired from the public rather than from the administration.
Many of the committees are never told whether there was a grant available or not. Often they just sort of find out through the grapevine that something hadn't been applied for, or something more obvious like the Forest Legacy, where we know year after year we applied, and then all of a sudden, we're not applying for it.
Transparency and integrity continue to be front burner issues throughout Maine government, which was recently awarded an F grade in this year's state integrity investigation. Maine was singled out by the Center for Public Integrity and Global Integrity for numerous practices, including the shredding of documents at Maine's Center for Disease Control and Prevention in 2013. The integrity report also cited the governor's habit of withholding funding for programs or agencies with whom he disagrees. David Sherwood, a contributing writer at the Maine Center for Public Interest Reporting, who has reviewed Maine's integrity shortcomings, says legislation such as Hill's would bring some clarity to the expectations of various branches of government when it comes to transparency. While much is made of what Democrats say is LePage's so-called politics of personal destruction, Sherwood says these issues have the potential to emerge from any political entity.
It could happen at any time with any administration, and that's exactly why we need laws that mandate accountability and transparency, so that regardless of which party is in power, everyone is accountable.
Republicans, including Assistant House GOP leader Ellie Espling, say that before the Legislative Council can get to the details of Hill's transparency bill or any other appealed proposals, they must first determine whether it meets the definition of emergency legislation, which is required to admit new bills to the second regular session of the legislature. And Espling says the council, by necessity, has to limit the number of new bills.
To do our due diligence, you know, we said no a lot the first go around. We look forward to hearing from people who want to appeal. And it's all about getting the information to know, is it truly an emergency? Do we need to do that right now?
The Legislative Council is scheduled to meet Thursday at the State House. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Maine's Governor Paul LePage once again is appealing for more electricity from eastern Canada down into New England. LePage spoke at an energy conference in Boston, calling for movement on the construction of high-voltage transmission lines and other infrastructure. Keith Shortall has more.
It's a recurring theme for Governor LePage, who told residents of Newport on Tuesday night that he's teamed up with the governors of Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and Connecticut to strive for two important goals. First, to bring more natural gas to Maine.
And to try to get a critical mass of the citizens of all those four states to demand that our legislature lower the cost of electricity, and you can do that by buying low-cost hydroelectricity and getting away from solar, because it doesn't shine much during a snowstorm. It doesn't shine when it's raining, and 12 hours a day it's dark.
And Quebec Premier Philippe Couillard, also a prominent guest at the New England-Canada Business Council Conference, told WBUR in Boston that the province is willing to oblige requests for electricity from the region.
The emphasis put on renewable energy, both by my colleagues of New England, but also by the president's recent announcements on climate change, make it ideal, I think, to increase our market share here in New England as far as hydroelectricity is concerned.
And Canada is now adding extra hydro capacity with a number of sites around the country. But a major obstacle for LePage and the other New England governors is infrastructure. Proposals for high-voltage transmission lines from Canada have run up against opposition from environmental groups, including the Conservation Law Foundation, who argue that imported hydropower is not the best long-term solution for the region or for the planet. Greg Cunningham, director of the group's Clean Energy and Climate Change Program, says transmission lines have impacts on local communities. And, says Cunningham, it's important to ask whether investment in hydro will come at the expense of the region's renewable energy industry.
Hydro is going to be and needs to be part of the solution. The question is, are we formulating it appropriately to ensure that we maximize the benefits and minimize the negative impacts?
Including, says Cunningham, big hydro's carbon footprint. But Quebec Premier Philippe Couillard says pollution concerns have been overstated, and while that there may be a temporary increase in emissions during the first 5 or 6 years after the construction of a new hydro dam.
Evidence shows that in the long term, over the life cycle of the projects, a large hydroelectric project has the same carbon footprint than a solar or wind farm.
At Friday's conference, LePage noted that the state of Maine had lowered its emissions by 30%, but only because much of the state's industrial base has disappeared. For MPBN News, I'm Keith Shortall.
Finally today, the Portland-based writing center, The Telling Room, is being recognized by the White House next week. The center will receive a National Arts and Humanities Youth Program Award for its work with refugee and immigrant high school students. As Patty White reports, the program helps students write and publish stories to increase literacy and to connect them with their communities and themselves.
18-year-old Neela Sadiri has done plenty of writing in school, and she's developed some pretty strong feelings about it.
I hate writing. I mean, I hate it.
Then she came to the Telling Room, and it flipped a switch.
But now I love it.
Sadiri is part of the Young Writers and Leaders program, where she can write about whatever she wants, and that's made all the difference. There's a lot on her mind. She's from Afghanistan and moved to Maine 2 years ago.
The Telling Room give you the chance to write about what you want, and they give you the time to listen to you.
Over and over we heard there is a need for programs to support the refugee and immigrant community. Heather Davis is the executive director of the Telling Room. They're facing tremendous obstacles because of their literacy skills, and a lot of them have experienced trauma before they make it to the States. It's hard enough for any teenager to find their way through high school, but with everything these kids have going on, we realized that they needed a special place where they could connect with other kids like them. Young Writers and Leaders is a free program that serves about 45 kids annually. Some come to the Telling Room for one-week intensives. Others come once a week after school for an entire year. Students sharpen their writing skills with three projects: a personal narrative, a multimedia project, and poetry.
So today is our first day of poetry. We're going to talk all about poetry for the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Molly Haley is one of the instructors for Young Writers and Leaders. She says the program develops both literacy and leadership skills.
We publish each student in a book. We offer them as many opportunities as possible to stand up in front of an audience and share their story with a crowd.
High school senior Ibrahim Shikara completed the program last year and published a poem called Cairo Kid.
I am a person who has lived in three different countries on three continents, but I still don't know where my home is.
Before coming to Maine, Shikara lived in Iraq and Egypt. Next week, he'll expand his travels to Washington, D.C., when he'll go to the White House to accept the Telling Rooms Award from Michelle Obama. Shikara says, more than anything else, the Young Writers and Leaders program helped him learn about himself. When he writes, he says he feels weight lifted off his chest.
I'm a person who sometimes be sad for days or I don't know why, but when I start writing about them, I feel like why. Like I just write, and sometimes I feel like, I can solve it. Like, oh, I can see why he's upset, and I can solve the problem from that writing.
Beyond writing, the Young Writers and Leaders program aims to help kids envision future success. Students visit local colleges and get help with application essays. The program has become so popular that even though it's tripled its student base, there's still a waiting list of about 50 kids.
I just feel like I'm the luckiest guy here because I'm here in this photo.
Mohammed Al-Bahadli says he applied after witnessing the transformation of friends who went through it.
I look at this program as basically a place where I could discover what's inside before what's outside. I'm at a point in my life where I want to see what's really, who I really am before I get out in the real world and go to college and basically start dealing with big stuff.
The Telling Room will receive $10,000 as part of the National Arts and Humanities Youth Program Award. Heather Davis says it will help grow the Young Writers and Leaders program. She wants to at least double the number of students it serves and expand to other communities like Lewiston. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
Let's have a check of the weather now. Tonight, showers turning to flurries in the north and west with some accumulation over the mountains. Otherwise, tonight, some clouds, few showers inland and down east. Low temperatures tonight in the mid-30s to low 40s north to south. And tomorrow, showers and flurries in the north and west with some more accumulation over the mountains. Otherwise, partly sunny to cloudy. Windy statewide with highs in the low 40s to low 50s north to south. And that's Maine Things Considered for tonight. Thank you to Jennifer Mitchell, Mal Leary, Susan Sharon, and Chris Sweet. If you missed part of this, please check it out on our podcast, This Day in Maine. It's at mpbn.net.